right. I'm going to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. We do have a quorum here. So the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the February 5th meeting. Is there a motion?
Are they Mr. Chair, move the approval of the minutes.
Okay. Representative Lee's moved approval of the minutes. Are they in there? Okay. All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. The motion carries. I would like to just draw your attention real quick to a memo that's in your packets. So there are five bills that were referred to the election subcommittee, House Files 471, 489, 534, 673, and 677. So just wanted to make sure to mention that. So the first item on the agenda is House File 141. The first bill on the agenda, I should say, is House File 141. Chair Poppy, thank you for coming to our committee. So if you could just please, and I will move that House File 141 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. So if you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 141 changes the vote required for a port authority to dispose of property from two-thirds to a regular majority. And just for your information, a port authority may sell and convey property owned by it within a port or industrial district if it determines that the sale and conveyance are in the best interests of the district and its people and that the transaction furthers its general plan of port improvement or industrial development or both. And that is from 469.065, subdivision 1, the power of a port authority. The district I represent, Austin, is within Maurer County. We actually don't have any natural water in our district, so having a port authority seems a bit unusual, but it's due to the economic development and industrial development piece of that. So we don't, and we're not a port to water, we are a port to industrial and economic development. And what this bill does is it simplifies and standardizes, but mostly simplifies the property transfer for economic development. So a port authority is able to do that with a simple majority. So, Mr. Chair, House File 141 is before you, and I just appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. And just a quick question. I understand cities already have this authority to do it by majority vote. Is that correct?
That's true. That is true, Mr. Chair. It's standardizing it so it's like a city council would have. And you do have a letter in your packet that's, I apologize, my testifier was not able to make it today due to the weather. And so we do have this information in your packet, and there are a few other port authorities that are listed there and signatures from different ports within different cities. So I just wanted you to be aware of that.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Poppy. And yes, no, hard to blame anybody for not making it here in this weather. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I notice, you know, majority of commissioners, is that inherently interpreted as the total number of commissioners, or if you have a quorum, the majority of the quorum? And maybe staff could clarify that.
Sure. Mr. Gehring or Ms. Dyson, do you?
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, I am not sure what it says of the commissioners. In the letter from, I think it's from Mr. Clark, the Port Authority and City Administrator in Austin, on the second page, he refers to it as, he says the stipulation of two-thirds is, doesn't really make a difference because requirement would clearly present a majority of the Port Authority. Two-thirds is a majority of the Port Authority. But to be honest, I'm not clear if it would require two-thirds of a quorum or two-thirds of the commissioners. I would, to be safe, I would always interpret it as two-thirds of all of the commission board, since it doesn't say of a quorum.
Yeah, I was Thank you, Ms. Dyson. Yeah, I would read it that way, too, just because it doesn't
Mr. say Chair.
Commissioners present. Yeah.
That I ask this because there are multiple port authorities throughout the state. One of the more recent ones created was DMC in Rochester. And when you set this up, you have X number of voting participants. And you can hold a meeting and hold business if you have a majority of those. And a majority, you know, you've got a quorum. So you've got a majority of the subgroup that makes up and qualifies as a majority or quorum supporting something, which may be a minority of the total commissioners, depending on the composition of the commission of the Port Authority, since I'm assuming this is globally involved. Therefore, you know, two-thirds, you're probably more guaranteed that you're going to have a majority, even if it's two-thirds of a quorum. But I there's ambiguity here, and I would hate to have something happen to where they've got a quorum, just barely. The majority of the quorum votes for a land sale, and somebody who doesn't agree with that transaction comes forward with legal action saying, well, it needs to be a majority of the commissioners, which is a greater number than was the commissioners that voted on it. It's just like we have in the House, you need 68. Yeah. There could be 70 people there, and you could have 67 vote for something, you know, which is a definite majority, but that doesn't count. So I just want clarification and non-ambiguity.
Well, Representative Quam, I mean, to the extent this is a problem, it's even, I mean, it's a problem in existing law. I mean, yes. Right now, state law says that title transferred without approval of two-thirds of the commissioners. So it's even more of a steep, if that is the way it's interpreted in existing law, it's even more of a hill to climb. But so at least this change would make it simpler for port authorities in that respect. So, I mean, if it does need to be clarified, there is another committee stop. I guess maybe I should ask Ms. Dyson, I mean, would you read it that way as well? Under existing law, two-thirds of the commissioners present need to vote in favor of any change. So to the extent, you know, there's a quorum, and like it seems like that would be even more of a problem in existing law, and Representative Poppy's bill would be a step towards making it more a more straightforward process for port authorities.
Mr. Chair, I think you're correct in saying that it doesn't change the ambiguity, it changes the number. So you're going from two-thirds to a majority, so that if there is an ambiguity, that's not changed by the bill, it's already there. But I do read it as two-thirds of all of the commissioners. It doesn't say of a quorum.
Yeah. So. I guess, Representative Poppy, could you maybe look into this just to see if maybe as this moves forward in the process, just check with the port authorities that you've been working with on this and see if they've had a problem with that existing requirement, whether or not there's a quorum there, and then if that is something that needs to be addressed. I know Chair Mahoney asked to see this language in his division, so if that is currently a problem with port authorities, I think it could be resolved. Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't believe that I was a voting member of the legislature when the original law went through. And so I base my votes and opinion on, you know, current status and simply adding a majority of all the commissioners takes out the ambiguity and therefore makes it, you know, something I could, you know, support. And that's why I was bringing it up, because we've got time to, you know, what? You're deleting three words and adding two. Well, maybe we could add a couple more and just be more complete in our duties.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to jump in there.
Sure, Representative Poppy.
So that's part of the reason for this bill, but you are correct, Representative Quam. It is ambiguous, it's whatever. It's not clear right now, ambiguous. But let me just refer you to the letter that Mr. Clark provided on behalf of the Port Authorities, because in the third paragraph, additionally, Subdivision 7, as written currently, falls under Section 469.055, Powers and Duties of a Port Authority. The next section, 469.065, Sale of Property, does not list any requirement of a two-thirds majority vote, so the intent of the voting requirements demonstrates some inconsistency. Without any such reference, Port Authority, as written, would generally be viewed as a quorum in 469.065, and any requirements for the sale of property should fall under the section of sale of realty rather than the powers of duties. So as further demonstration of a discrepancy in the last sentence of Section 469.055, Subdivision 7, statute would require that a quorum be present. This stipulation is inconsistent because the two-thirds majority vote requirement outlined in the paragraph would clearly present the majority of the Port Authority and would otherwise be irrelevant. If that clears it up, clears that matter up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. Representative Kwong?
That sort of exemplifies the fact that there are room for interpretation and some discourse and... again, it being for, universal, offline, maybe we could try and come up with a less ambiguous, adding of a few words, which wouldn't affect your Port Authority in this implementation, but may affect a different or some future one we can't imagine. And thank you very much for the time.
Yeah, you're welcome. Are there any additional questions or comments? Any closing remarks, Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to work with Representative Klum. The idea behind this bill is to make it clearer and to make it so that it is a majority vote that is standardized with what city councils have, and to simplify. But the original language in this section is not as clear as it could be, and so I'm happy to change things to make it even clearer for everyone, if that is the intent and the desire. So I can certainly speak with my city manager and have him also weigh in on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Poppy, and this certainly sounds like a step in the right direction. So seeing no additional comments, the motion is to refer House File 141 to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion carries. Thank you, Representative Poppy. Your bill is on its way.
Thank you.
There might be a previous version of the agenda in members' packets. I think Representative Poppy's House File 483 was also initially on the agenda. However, the Pension Commission has asked to take a look at that bill, so it's not on the agenda here today, and it will be heard in the Pension Commission first. So the next bill on the agenda is House File 300. Representative Pinto is here. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
And I will move that House File 300 be recommended for re-referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I don't know that I've been in front of this committee before in my couple years in the House, so I'm really pleased to be here. Thank you. This bill, House File 300, is a bill that was provided to me. Is it where are the treats? That's good. Yeah, not exactly. Right job, Representative Elkins.
I won't hold it against you.
Coming after you. So House File 300 is a bill that was presented to me by the State Bar Association. Members may remember that Representative Dennis Smith had carried some of these bills in the past to address just a number of issues that have cropped up in the civil law area. And the bill is supported by the League of Minnesota Cities, Associate General Contractors, and basically addressing a concern that when there are when there's a challenge that's made to an awarding of a public procurement of a contract, that in the first instance, that challenge really should be heard in the district court, which is our first level of court, as opposed to going up to the appellate court. Appellate courts, that was the understanding prior to a few years ago, and there was a court case that has introduced maybe a bit of confusion there, and I'll turn things over to my testifier to provide more information. This is really clearing things up to get back to that original understanding. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn things over to the testifier with your permission.
Sure. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dean Thompson. I'm a member of the Fabianski Law Firm and the co-chair of the Legislative Committee of the Minnesota State Bar Section on Construction Law. I have been practicing in this area for over 35 years, and I think this is a very helpful bill for both municipalities and state agencies and for those members of the public or disappointed bidders who are concerned about a particular procurement award. In the past, before a Supreme Court decision in 2015, all bid protests or challenges to an award would go to district court, and they'd go there in a very expeditious manner where a temporary injunction was sought, so it was considered an emergency action, and the judge would then rule as to the likelihood of success. And I'd say in about 99% of the time, the parties at that hearing would accept the judge's decision on whether they were likely to win or lose, because you don't want to go back and litigate a case a judge has told you he thinks you're going to lose. So that, as a practical matter, was a very efficient and economical way to resolve these types of issues. And it gave the public agency certainty that it could award a contract and not have it come back later and be declared illegal. And it gave some sort of remedy to the issue person who was concerned about the award, and they either won or lost. It's very efficient. Now, in 2015, the Supreme Court thought that, I believe in a passing reference, that these types of decisions by municipalities or public agencies were somehow quasi-judicial, and if they're quasi-judicial, if you disagreed with them, you had to take your complaint to the appellate court, which is a very lengthy process. It takes about 90 days to get all your briefs filed up there. Then you have to wait for a hearing, and then you have to wait another 90 days for a decision. Now, this is not an expeditious or efficient way to handle any sort of challenge to a procurement award. It puts the award somewhat in limbo. It's difficult for the public agency to go forward in fear that their award would later be declared illegal by the Court of Appeals, and it certainly gave no relief, prompt relief, to the disappointed party who thought the bid should have gone to him or her. So the purpose of this bill is to put these types of protests back where they're best suited, which the Bar Association and our work with the League of Cities has indicated is the district court, to get a quick economical decision. That's what used to happen for decades prior to the Rochester City Lines in 2015. And there are some good protections, we believe, in the bill for public agencies. The protest has to be filed very quickly. It has to be filed before the contract is executed. It gives a very short definition of a reasonable time for which the protest has to be filed. And then it doesn't change the standard of review that's applicable. It doesn't grant any additional damages or remedies to bid protesters. Keeps the law as it was, and we believe as it should be.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
And nothing further from us, Mr. Chair. We'll just open up for questions with your permission.
Sure. Are there any questions for Representative Pinto or Mr. Thompson? Okay, not seeing it. It looks like this will be a fairly straightforward bill. Representative Pinto, any closing remarks?
Just thank you, Mr. Chair, and members for your consideration.
Okay, thank you. Again, the motion is to re-refer House File 300 to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Yeah, motion carries. Thank you, Representative Pinto. Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you.
Next, we have Representative Cagle with House File 281. Any accommodation you need, Representative Cagle, we are more than happy to accommodate.
It's been provided.
Okay. Thank you for being here, Representative Cagle. Would you like to move your bill to the General Register?
I would.
Okay, sure. And do you want to present it? I understand that you have an author's amendment, too. Would you like to act on that first, or how would you like to proceed?
I can explain the bill, and then my explanation also includes the amendment.
So you'd like to move the amendment?
Yes, please.
Okay, sure. Representative Cagle moves the A2 amendment to put the bill in the shape she would like. Are there any questions about that? Okay. All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. The amendment carries. The bill is in the form you would like it, Representative Cagle. If you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill was brought to me by my cities of Blaine and Spring Lake Park. The bill was passed last year out of this committee and placed on the General Register. And what this bill does is it's an exemption to the open meeting laws, and so it would allow members to participate via active TV, Skype, if they are unable to be in a open public space while they're serving either in the military, deployed in drill, deployed on active or on active duty, or if the member has been advised by a healthcare professional that against being in a public place for medical reasons. And so what the amendment would add is that they are only allowed to participate via interactive TV up to 3 times per year. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. If you could please just identify yourself for the record, that would be great, and proceed with your testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you. My name is Dan Buchholz. I'm the city administrator in Spring Lake Park. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for hearing this bill today. The idea for this bill really came from a situation we faced in Spring Lake Park about 3 years ago, where 2 of our council members faced, out of a 5-member council, faced significant health issues. One was battling stage 4 cancer, and the other went through a relatively new treatment for multiple sclerosis that was essentially like chemotherapy, which wiped out his immune system. So due to their health situations, our 5-member council was essentially down to its quorum. The member that was battling MS, was mentally fine, would have been able to Skype into the meeting if there wasn't the provision saying that the location where that member would be was open and accessible to the public. Being in a public area could have exposed him to a germ with his immune system that could have killed him. So we feel that this change in our situation for where our health professional advises not to be in a public location is a reasonable accommodation to allow us to have, in other cities, to have the benefit of having all of their members being able to participate in those types of situations.
Sure.
And then when talking to Blaine, and I'll turn it over to Kathy here, she ran into a similar situation with one of her council members for military reasons. So,
thank you. And if you could please just state your name for the record, that would be.
Chair, meeting members, Kathy Sorensen, Blaine City Clerk. Mr. Buchholz and I were discussing the similar situation in Blaine. I believe you have a letter in front of you from our Ward 3 council member, Andrew Jarvis. Unfortunately, he's unable to be here today, but the situation that we had in Blaine was in September of 17. He was deployed as Minnesota Emergency Preparedness Liaison Officer to a secured facility and was unable to physically be there, obviously, but was able to attend and participate in our regular scheduled council meeting. But because of the fact that he was on a secured base, not accessible, obviously, to the public, he was unable to participate in that meeting. So this is the reason that we're bringing this exception forward for consideration, that during deployment and unable to be there, still would be able to participate in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sorensen. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill? Okay. Mr. Buchholz.
Thank you very much. One thing, I just wanted to also mention that the League of Minnesota Cities supports this bill and that they've reached out to stakeholders, including the Minnesota Newspaper Association, the Minnesota Coalition on Open Government Information, and the ACLU, all of which are comfortable with the language outlined in the bill.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Cagle. The only question I have is the amendment we put on, it limits it to 3 times per calendar year. And what was the reasoning for that? I mean, if somebody had a health condition, they couldn't participate for, may not be able, it may go longer than 3 times in a year.
Representative Cagle.
I believe the, I will defer to Irene from the League of Cities. She might be able to answer that question better.
Sure. Welcome to the city. Welcome to the committee. Sorry, I thought I was still on a city council, apparently. If you could please just identify yourself for the...
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Irene Gao. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Representative Nelson, it's when we, in working with the Senate and trying to get it passed in that body, one of the things that the bill author was concerned with was actually the council member not being accessible to the public. And so if it was for a year or for more, we had agreed that 3 might be a good number. You're right, if someone was ill and they weren't able to be in the public, this would exclude them, but we just wanted to make sure that there's a good balance, that the residents of the city could also have access to that council member.
Representative Nelson?
So, Mr. Chair, the lesser body is the reason for this amendment, I hope. Thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I had the exact same questions, Representative Nelson, and I for one, I think it's your bill, and I think you should push forward your bill however you see fit. However, I think it's worth pushing back a little bit on that idea. If I see the reasoning in putting in some type of limitation, but certainly in the medical component, we're identifying a pretty specific health scenario in which someone is either immunocompromised, in your example, or other issues, probably longer term hospitalization, where, quite frankly, 3 meetings probably isn't going to get you through. And so I don't know if it's over the course, you know, limited over the course of 6 months or over a calendar, come up with a number over a calendar year. I guess I don't know what the right balance is, but if we're going to say that we should leverage and utilize technology for elected officials to appropriately participate in the meetings and attend those meetings and represent their constituencies, I think that type of arbitrary limit on it just seems, it doesn't seem logical to me. When I went through the heart transplant process and in 96, I was the bubble boy for 9.5 months, where I didn't leave the room because I was immunocompromised and on significant medication. So that's kind of the reality of those types of healthcare crises. And so I love the intent. I love the spirit. I just think putting that type of arbitrary limit, if we're truly trying to help someone stay engaged and stay in their position and continue to represent their constituents, I just don't think that's enough time to do that in reality.
Yeah. I don't know if you have any comment. It sounds, is this to this point? I do have another member on the list. Okay, Representative Selk.
I agree with Representative Zerwas from a completely different point of view. I think technology has blown by this question. We are the ones, our framework are the ones that are completely out of context. As I sit here, I can communicate with anybody in the public live while this meeting is going on, and I don't believe I've stepped on any rules. I probably stepped on the idea of my concentration being diverted, but it is the point here that if the argument for this amendment was that the public doesn't have access to a person who's participating via Skype and or 700 other pipelines of communication, I think that is just superfluous and silly. The fact is that the public has probably more access to us than what we could enumerate. So I would caution us to put something in, as you said, arbitrary, and you know, I use other language to describe what I think of this, but I really think that we are not understanding the context within which we can all communicate and communicate as the public servant that exists. Thank you.
Ms. Gao, did you want to comment on it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, I really appreciate the conversation. In a lot of ways, I think that you're right. In this body, different than in city council meetings, one of the things that I've observed, and maybe those of you who are former city officials can attest to too, is that sometimes there are these chance conversations that happen just because you're there, and because the public or because your residents know that you're going to be there too. So that's one of the things to protect, and it is a balance. Often when we're looking at open meeting law issues, we do want to make sure that it works, not just for our elected officials in our cities, but it is that balance of making sure that you have that access. And you're right, I'm probably talking in this instance in-person access to your elected officials. Representative Zerwas, I really appreciate the point that you had brought up as well. One of the things is that it's when someone is ill, this allows for that participation. I imagine that there were some times where you imagine there were times that you may not have felt up to actually going or right participating. And in those instances, then that council member would just be absent. And I think that that allows for some of that balance. In the future, if this is something that it is a bit of a comfort thing, and there is a strong interest in making sure that this bill gets passed into law so that we can do something for our council members now. If there's an interest to expand it in the future, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, I guess I would just point out, too, that I do view this as a step in the right direction. I've had a, you know, and the limit is somewhat arbitrary, but I do feel like there are a group of people that this would at least capture and enable them to continue. I heard about this exact issue from a candidate for the Golden Valley City Council where I live, who was an active duty in the military, and wanted to have an option. Like he didn't end up winning, but you know, he wanted to have this option available to him. So I do think this is something that there is a real need for. I think this is a step in the right direction. I don't know that three is the right number necessarily, or that we even need a number at all, but at least at this point, you know, I can understand the concerns of ensuring at least some level of accessibility to the public, to their council members. So, you know, maybe this is a starting point as we see how this works, but I do think that there is a real need here. So Representative Quam, you were next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate you. In the past, I've carried a open meeting law bill, and it's of a diverse minefield that you walk through in order to be able to get to the other side. Hearing this bill, you're also reminded me of some quarantine bills I've carried with the department, and I've always thought that there should be a statute that if you have, you're either under quarantine, medical quarantine, that you should not, you should be exempt from some of the different laws, including, you know, being able to not appear before the court and not face a penalty there. So this is a broader issue that I think needs to be addressed, and I do appreciate you hitting this part of it, and hopefully it'll pave the way for us to improve a few other points when a person can't be out in the public because the doctor has them on a medical quarantine, or you know, they are, the health department says you may have been exposed to Ebola and we don't want you out there shaking hands and talking to people, but it means you can still communicate with the technology we have and participate in life. And I think that your intent is good, and good luck in the final conference committee battle.
Thank you. So, Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this forward. And it's always good to see you, Kathy, from my wonderful city of Blaine, the greatest city in Minnesota. Yeah, I actually echo all the sentiments of what's been saying, so I'll keep it brief. To the point that Representative Sock made, that technology allows us to keep in contact. We can text, call, voicemail, or whatever you need to do with your constituents already. And if you're not doing that, when you're physically capable of doing that, you're going to lose your election. So it kind of sorts itself out, which I would say that's the limit by the voters get to decide if you're doing your job, if you're no longer capable of doing your job in many cases. And in the case of the military, easily you can get deployed for a year, especially, I mean, say we happen into another military incursion somewhere in the world, you can be deployed for a year, and that's easily going to exceed the three. So at very least, hopefully, I would love to see you fight for a higher number, but I totally understand this should be passed, so whatever it takes to make that happen, I'm fine with too.
Thank you, Representative West. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make the observation, first of all, that in my own recent teleconferencing experience, that people on either end of the teleconference are able to fully participate in the discussion, regardless of which end of it a comment was made. So somebody could be in the city council member and chambers and still be able to fully see and participate in a discussion, including the comments from a member who was participating remotely. So I'm not sure that for that reason that really anything is being diminished by somebody participating in a teleconference from a remote location, given where the state of current technology. So I think this conversation is going to continue. The other question I had was, do you have a Senate author yet?
Representative Cagle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wilkins. We're in the process. The bill is over there, and it will get dropped.
Okay.
Are there any additional comments or questions? Okay, seeing any, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Cagle?
I would, Mr. Chair and members, I just want to thank you for the support, and I'm willing to keep working on this if that is what the body would like. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Cagle. It does sound like there is some interest in possibly, at the very least, increasing the number. So as you... I guess just you pledged to think about that moving forward, so appreciate that. The motion is to re-refer House File 281 to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. The bill is continuing. Thank you, Representative Cagle.
You guys.
Thank you, Mr. Buchholz, Ms. Sorensen. There's Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and... Mr. Chair, I didn't want to bring this up during the discussion of any of the three bills that we had before us today because the minority had no concerns with any of the three bills. But as we're all trying to navigate this process and committee referrals and setting up the schedule and the majority's continued commitment and pledge to increase transparency, I would note that the notice for today's hearing and the three bills that were going to be heard was posted on Tuesday at 11:30 in the morning, not 72 hours in advance. The majority has consistently pledged to provide 3 days' notice for bills. In this instance, as being non-controversial minor bills, it certainly isn't a concern. As we start to see other bills move forward, and obviously there's challenges with weather and other things that members and folks from the public that would like to participate in the discussion and be here to discuss, unlike in the bill we just heard, there is no way for members of the public to Skype in to comment on these. And so advance notice is appreciated. The majority has consistently put input whenever practicable within your rules that you'll provide 72 hours notice. We would just prefer that schedule and for the majority to adhere to that schedule moving forward.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. I apologize. It was an oversight. So it's on me. as I'll endeavor to do that. Sometimes it takes a while just to get everything finalized. I think that's what we had this general plan in place for about a week. I'll try to make a more of an effort to get in touch with you in advance, just to let you know. And I can say now, I haven't checked the website recently, but I know the plan for Tuesday is to hear a Representative Erickson bill related to the an appointed position in her district, as well as House File 400, the opioid bill. Representative Olson, I think it's been posted, although I haven't checked the calendar recently, and we'll also make sure we get the agenda for Thursday out to you. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so everyone, for the record, and so everyone's aware, the chair and I have been communicating, I think, every weekend coming up, kind of going over the week before, and really appreciate the chair's cooperation. And just want to make sure that any of these early concerns or issues, we just kind of nip it in the bud and get things moving as quickly as possible. Really appreciate your cooperation.
No problem. I'm still kind of trying to figure out how to be a chair myself here, so as this is my first time. Representative Kwong.
Thank you. I'm just curious. Our agenda showed, wasn't up to date. There was a bill moved. When did the public accessible, visible agenda get changed? Because with the weather as it is, frankly, there are some bills that are important to people that we might think are, sort of milquetoast, and they might be, I'm going to be there and driving through conditions such as today. I would hope that the visibility, because it's a much greater burden for, I think, the public if they're, trying to keep tabs. So agenda-wise, sort of, what has that been? Today is an example, and then the process.
Sure. It's my understanding that the notice is up electronically, that the bill was pulled and has been for 2 days. There was a accident, and the physical copy in your agenda packet was the earlier version, but at least electronically it's been off the agenda for 2 days, and I think nobody was here to speak on that bill. So the public was notified in that case about the bill that was removed from the agenda. It's just there was an oversight, and accidentally an earlier version of the agenda ended up in your packets.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Kwong,
the whole intent is, we talk about, and sometimes the discussions are informing each other, and frankly, the general public, and I often get queries from constituents and people that aren't constituents of what's going on, and confusion, and I'd almost put a higher priority in having out public-wise, because, that's who we serve.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. That's what happened in this case. So thank you. Any additional member questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.